welcome on in, ladies and gentlemen, to Overtime. Not Jake Folnick. You guys just heard his beautiful voice for the last 5 hours. So you get me, Cleveland's biggest Matt Festa lover, Anthony Allant. What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? How we doing? Bye, Jake. I will be in with you guys from 7 until 11 tonight. We got a packed show for you guys. Plenty of LeBron talk. The United States men's national team kicks off. Do we say kicks off? Like first kick, puck drops, whatever the hell it is. Starts at 8 o'clock. So if you're out there, just like Jake said the other day, there's no Guardians game on tonight. The LeBron news will pop up on your phone before it does the TVs. There's nothing else on tonight. Put the game on the big TV and turn 92.3 The Fan up from now until 11 o'clock so that we could shepherd you guys through the night. We also have plenty of Brown stuff to get to, actually a lot more than we would typically have in July. And of course, Guardians, big weekend series, and now they're headed off for another road trip ahead of the All-Star break and the whole different thing. We'll break it all down, but I'm joined by Jax Gregory on the board in his Cleveland Cavaliers LeBron James jersey and doing work behind the scenes and on the 2020s is Mackenzie Flume. You want to call in 216-474-0092. She will diligently be taking your phone calls all evening. But of course, the summer of LeBron 4.0 continues, and I have a couple of weeks ago when this whole thing started up, I guess that was last Tuesday. God, time moves so slow in the summer of LeBron. I had a friend that was texting me constantly the betting market updates on LeBron James's next location. The Polymarket, Kalshi, you can bet on literally everything going on in the world. I don't do it, so I don't really know how it works, but there's plenty of things like where you can bet on LeBron's next location. And over the course of these last 6-7 days, it has continued to go up and up and up in favor for the Cavaliers, to the point where today I look at Kalshi and I look at Polymarket just because what the hell, I'm interested, and it's up to over 60%. And this is not just the betting markets doing their own things, and you know, even DraftKings and FanDuel, the more traditional sports books, have LeBron's next team as Cleveland as the odds-on favorite at this point. It's because there is that growing sentiment that where there is smoke, there is fire. And sometimes you have to believe that where there is so much smoke, as there is in situation, there actually might be some credence to the idea that he could be returning for another stint here in Cleveland. If you guys have listened to me since this news has broke last week, you have seen me go through maybe all of the stages of emotion to where I never really thought that he was coming back. I always thought that he was going to go back to LA and finish out his career and then become the media super mogul NBA owner that we all assumed he went out to LA to go be. Then he says he's not coming back, and I still did not feel like he was coming here, because I didn't want to allow myself to believe that LeBron was coming back. And then I had like an hour period at the other place where I worked, where I just sat there and thought about the possibility and thought about all of the feelings that I had the last time he came back. And even that euphoric feeling the last time that he decided that he was coming home in 2014. And I just let the floodgates of emotion open. And since then, I have tried to stay objective. I have tried to look at this thing from a realistic standpoint that, hey, maybe LeBron doesn't really owe us anything else. He delivered the one promise that he set out to deliver back in 2016. And at that point in time, I think all Cleveland fans agreed that our deal here was done. Our exchange was done. You delivered exactly what you set out to do. Whatever you decide in the rest of your NBA career and thereafter, all things are set up, settled up. We're good to go. And I try and keep that in the back of my mind when I'm looking at all of these pieces of audio, these tiny breadcrumbs of information coming out from the whiteboard to Brian Windhorst talking about other teams to everybody under the sun having their think piece about where LeBron should go and might go based on different pieces of reporting. By the way, the newest little wrinkle today, if we're continuing this LeBron summer watch, is that Dean Wade's new number in Philadelphia is 45. He was 32 in Cleveland, so the tweet as it went was, why would he not just go to 23. Maybe Philly is leaving that number open for a certain somebody. So that's the newest little wrinkle in there for you. But when I'm looking at all these things, I try and keep that in mind that our deal with LeBron is done. But I cannot help myself and believe that this is not going to happen eventually. And now we as a city are just sitting here in a waiting period. And I'm okay with that. I think that obviously they mentioned it at certain points throughout the day. I heard it with Ken and Anthony this morning, that eventually the idea of this LeBron rumor mill and the quote unquote summer of LeBron is going to wear thin on people. But I think if you're in the camp of, I mean, like Jax has basically said since February that LeBron's coming home. If you're in that camp, you're fine with it. It's just all white noise for you until he finally makes his actual decision. And up until then, it's just fun off-season chatter. But even if you're in the camp that maybe he's not coming back, I don't know how long this, I don't see a situation where this necessarily wears thin on people. Maybe in 3 weeks, if there's still no decision, people are going to be like, all right, come on, I need to, you know, training camp starting back up with the Browns. Other things are going on. The Guardians are heading down to the trade deadline. I need to monopolize my time with something else than just LeBron talk. And eventually, you know, a rat is not okay with just the little breadcrumbs that you feed him. You got to give him something substantive. But I trust LeBron's camp to do that a little bit more. I can't help but believe that this is just becoming an inevitability. And I don't want to say all that for him to just go out there and choose Golden State or choose Philadelphia or Minnesota or Miami. But I've allowed myself to believe, I've allowed myself to run through all of the motions that I have and just be that 15-year-old kid that once again that I was the last time that he was back here in Cleveland. And I think the biggest the biggest little thing today that I latched onto was twofold. Brian Windhorst was on Part of My Take today and was discussing, of course, the LeBron offseason chatter. And the crux of what he said was basically he's talked to people in Philadelphia and they have said that we are afraid LeBron's next destination is going to be Cleveland. Everybody I've talked to is like, we're afraid it's Cleveland. Nobody seems like they have any optimism. And again, that's Brian Windhorst on Pardon My Take earlier today. If the growing sentiment among the biggest competitors for LeBron's services next year are getting the growing feeling and telling people like Brian Windhorst that we don't believe we have the upper hand here, you couple that with the Mark Stein and Jake Fisher report from over the weekend that the odds-on situation that people have to compete for is LeBron returning home to Cleveland. There's too much smoke for me over these last few days to make me think anything else than, yes, indeed, we are going to have another year of LeBron. And then I started to think more and more. The Windhorst thing was interesting to me that he specifically named Philadelphia because I was on Friday with Michael Markoch and Jax was here as well. We're discussing his other potential options, and one of those things up on the whiteboard from Rich Paul was Philadelphia. And so since that whiteboard came out, my biggest fear is that it is going to be Philadelphia. Well, he's not going to go to New York because the Knicks just won the championship, and he doesn't want his final chapter of his legacy to be akin to Kevin Durant. What's the next biggest market out there that he can supplant himself into? It's Philly. There's a long storied history with plenty of tremendous players throughout the decades of the NBA, and you have a ready-made team. I don't know how to, you know, juxtapose that and square that idea with the fact that why would he move 3,000 miles away to a city that he's never been to with fans that are going to always love him, but in an arm's length situation. We all know how Philly fans are. I can't necessarily square that part, but that has just been my going on. My feeling is that we are competing number one with Philadelphia. So then for Brian Windhorst to come out and be like, hey, Philly's not thinking like they have the upper hand in this situation. They feel like he's going to Cleveland. That gives me a lot of added optimism to this situation. And then I read a piece earlier today by Howard Beck from The Ringer, and you know, shout out to Anthony Lima. I don't know if you've heard of him. Great Twitter follow, by the way. Twitter reactions brought to you by Scheibe Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Howard Beck basically said that the decision for LeBron has been staring at us in the face this entire time. You look at all the other options of Minnesota, Golden State, Miami. How many other teams would you like me to name? It'll take me all 4 hours of this damn show to name them off. He looks at all of the other situations and says, wouldn't it be really cool for LeBron to go play with Anthony Edwards and Lonzo Ball? Wouldn't it be awesome for him to play alongside Bam Adebayo and Giannis Antetokounmpo at the place where he delivered two rings? How interesting would it be for him to have one final swan song and go out on top in some way, shape, or form alongside Steph Curry, the other great that he has been compared to in this generation? How interesting would it be if he were to head off to Denver or help shadow Cooper or help be the guy that helps Cooper Flagg learn how to be an NBA great down in Dallas and play alongside Kyrie Irving, the guy that helped him deliver that 2016 championship? All of these other situations sound cool on paper. They sound like a lot of fun, but it's a lot of if this, if that, something would look cool with someone. Like the surefire thing, the number one thing that is a surefire bet for LeBron is coming back to Cleveland. And it's not selfish. I don't feel like it's selfish for me to say that. I think it is the only place where he gets the two things that he's seeking out for. If this decision is truly about happiness and to compete for another championship ring, there's no better place than Cleveland. Nobody is going to love you better than Cleveland, and this is one of the most, if not the most, ready-made team to win right now in the Eastern Conference. 216-474-0092. How are we feeling about the potential of LeBron coming back? I think over the last 15 minutes, you have heard from me that I am full bore. He's coming back. I'm ready to go. Jax, nobody will be more sure than Jax Gregory has been. Every time.
Like you said, I got my jersey on ready for it to happen.
Jax texted me earlier today and said, did you think he was going to do it tonight? Or just like, how cool would it be if he did it tonight?
I'm just hoping that he does it tonight.
I mean, for both of our careers and Mackenzie's career in the back, that would be beautiful. So if that wants to happen, awesome. But I listened to the Sunday show where Daryl was basically pleading for LeBron to do it, and he didn't do it. I think every host wants that to happen. Of course they want it to happen. And for someone like me that's not in all the time, yeah, of course I want it to happen on my like one-off show that I'm in for Jake Volnick. How hilarious would it be if Jake gets pulled off of his own show because Nick's still out and LeBron makes his decision right now? Maybe we can have Jake come back from wherever he's at right now. All right, 216-474-0092. Big show coming up for you guys. Cade Crassus of the Daily Guards podcast coming up at 7:40. Dylan Feltovich of the Browns Wire at 8:20. Get a Grip at 9. And, of course, we have to get to the U.S. men's national team kicking off here in just about 40 minutes. But how are we feeling about LeBron? And if he comes back, is the team ready-made to win? And is the coach the right guy to coach up LeBron? It's Anthony Elant in for Jake Volnick until 11 o'clock on 92.3 The Fan. It's Anthony Elant back with you guys here on 92.3 The Fan. Taking your calls, 216-474-0092. I do want to get a vibe check from y'all about how we're feeling about the LeBron situation. Again, the betting markets, as much as you want to believe that or just take it as it is, the betting markets at the moment say that LeBron is his next decision, the odds on favorite, and I'm talking like over 60%, is coming back to Cleveland. And then Philly is right up there, and then Golden State is there as well. Miami's like fluttering around about 10%. You know, the more traditional markets have that situation playing out as well. So that's a situation. Obviously, Brian Windhorst and everybody all across social media were talking today about the, you know, situation that a lot of people believe is going to happen that other teams need to compete with. Is LeBron James coming back to Cleveland? And another thing that popped up on social media today is more Rich Paul stuff. No, there's no whiteboard this time. I love, by the way, that he, you know, came back on the Heat Central podcast and was like, I didn't really think that whiteboard was going to be that big of a deal. I just kind of threw it out there to give people a visual representation of LeBron's next decision. It's like, yeah, okay, dude, like you knew exactly what you were doing. I'm not buying that BS for a moment. But he said that there were a couple key factors that he's been looking at to help LeBron find his next team. And again, LeBron is off golfing. He's hanging out with his friends from Akron. He's doing literally anything else but worrying about basketball while Rich Paul is flying all across God's green acres to figure out where LeBron's next location is going to be. And he broke down four different things. He said defensive ratings, on-ball help and defense, offensive schemes, and coaches slash team success rate on ATOs, after timeout situations, like the scripted plays coming out of timeouts. So those are four, some of the more in-the-weeds factors that Rich Paul and LeBron are looking at to help him find his next team. So I guess we can start off there. Do you feel like the Cavs have a good enough defensive rating? Do they feel like they have a good enough offense? And of course, the big one that's been rattling around today is, do they feel like the Cavs have the right coach for LeBron to come back? Defensive-wise, I think we're good to go. Evan Mobley is a one-time Defensive Player of the Year award. It was a complete farce that he didn't get any Defensive Player of the Year votes this past year. He's one of the better defenders in the league. You add on top of that, Max Strus isn't, you know, tremendous, but he's good enough. James Harden isn't great. Donovan Mitchell hasn't been great in key situations, but at least down low, where it matters the most, Evan Mobley is your anchor on that defensive side of the ball. The offense is more kind of go with the flow. And that's kind of why I think that it would fit LeBron a lot better than other situations. Kenny Atkinson, since he's gotten here, has basically been the player's coach that Tyronn Lue was to a different extent. It's been, we're going to practice, we're going to do our things, but for the most part, I trust my players to go out on the floor and make the correct decisions. And we've seen that to varying levels of success. I think everybody could watch the Knicks series and the Toronto and the Detroit series and say that we would probably have wanted a little bit more offensive structure. We probably wouldn't have wanted guys like Dennis Schroeder taking shots constantly when he was coming down the court. And like, we've talked ad nauseum about how James Harden's role significantly got up, you know, significantly changed when the playoffs hit and he moved away from that facilitator point guard that I believe that they brought him in to be. But if the offensive structure is going to be, we'll practice, we'll figure out the guys that take the shots at the key moments, and then I'm going to go trust you guys, what does that sound like? That sounds exactly like a LeBron James offense. That is exactly what we've seen in Cleveland, in Miami. Like, when LeBron was at the peak of his powers, LeBron obviously works best as the guy that brings the ball up, the, you know, hefty wing on the outside, as the center down low. LeBron is the Swiss Army knife, and even at his advanced age of 41, yeah, he's still going to be that guy. Which is why I don't really understand the conversation that was cropping up today about whether or not LeBron James, quote-unquote, fit on this Cavaliers team. I want to pull up the Danny Cunningham audio. Danny Cunningham was on earlier today with the Morning Boys and was talking about whether or not LeBron even fit on this team.
He's grown as a coach, and the fact that he has coached a lot of different stars with varying degrees of success has at least prepared him to be in this situation. Whether or not he's the right coach, the wrong coach, how adaptable, like, I do think he's been an adaptable coach to some extent. I think they had a lot of success with James Harden. It's a good thing. They've had a lot of success with Donovan Mitchell. That's a good thing. I almost can say the fact that it went wrong in Detroit, or not in Detroit, in Brooklyn, is something that I do think could be something he has learned from. At this point, like, if you land LeBron James, you're not going to fire Kenny Atkinson for him. Now, maybe it goes poorly and there's a change made in the middle of the season. We have seen LeBron and we have seen the Cavs navigate that pretty well. So I do think that this is something where I don't know whether or not they do, but I do think some of the experiences that Kenny Atkinson has had coaching Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, I think that does give him a chance to be the right coach.
Okay, so I queued up the wrong clip. That was not Jax's fault. That was my fault. But I think what Danny Cunningham said about Kenny Atkinson, whether or not he's the right coach for LeBron, does square well with whether or not LeBron James fits on this team. Danny mentioned how adaptable Kenny Atkinson has been as a coach. And I think one of the big positives of Kenny since he's gotten here, and even at his time to varying levels of success in Brooklyn, is that he's been able to adapt on the fly. Remember, this is the same coach that just got plopped James Harden in February and was like, hey, we need you to get past the second round or we might fire your ass after this season. And then he had to pick up the pieces and be like, okay, I guess I'll figure out how to get James Harden and Dennis Schroeder and Keon Ellis into this situation. And now, even if LeBron doesn't come back, you're already looking at a team that they're shopping Max Strus and Dennis Schroeder. Jared Allen might be on the trade deadline and you're on the trade block, and you're already losing Dean Wade and Keon Ellis. So it's going to be, at least on the edges, a much different team. I believe that Kenny Atkinson, because he's an adaptable player-centric coach, has the capability to be the type of coach that works out here in Cleveland with LeBron James. David Blatt's name came up. David Blatt was an unproven coach that was brought here at the point in time that he was brought here. He was brought here to coach a 19-win team. And then basically overnight, he got handed LeBron James and Kevin Love. So we kind of knew that that was out of the water from the get-go. And then you wait after the first year, you get to the NBA Finals anyways because you got peak LeBron, and then you go on and you hire Tyronn Lue after that. I think if things work out the way that I think they might, it might look a little bit more closer to Tyronn Lue than it would David Blatt. Kenny Atkinson has coached a team with a lot of superstars here in Cleveland. I don't even really want to talk about what he did in Brooklyn, frankly, because I wasn't paying that much attention because they sucked. But secondly, because since he's come here, he's coached a team to 64 wins. He's coached Donovan Mitchell. He's coached a budding All-NBA superstar in Evan Mobley. And now he's trying to figure out how to coach a team with James Harden on it. Those are a lot of big personalities. Those are guys that want the ball in their hands constantly, at least in James Harden's situation. You think adding in LeBron James is going to totally throw off Kenny Atkinson's mojo? Do you think that's going to totally make him a different head coach? Like, I think that because of the type of coach that he is and the type of coach that we brought in for him to be, I think that fits perfectly with a LeBron James offense. I think that fits perfectly with a LeBron James team. He knows how to coach personalities with big superstars. Look, LeBron James is on a totally different level. The LeBron James idea is on a totally different stratosphere, and something that Kenny Atkinson, yeah, he would have to learn on the fly how to be the coach of a LeBron-led team. But this also isn't we're bringing in peak LeBron. Everybody understands what this situation this time around with LeBron would be. It's LeBron as a ancillary piece or a secondary option to Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley. This is Donovan Mitchell's team until further notice. And yes, LeBron James would be the biggest star in Cleveland, as he would at literally every other situation in the NBA, other than maybe Golden State, just because Steph Curry's been there his entire career. But it would still be a Donovan Mitchell-led offense, an Evan Mobley-led defense, along with LeBron James. So I don't think that anything is going to be markedly different if you bring in LeBron. And frankly, you know, that's why I don't think that fit is a big question. I don't think it's a big issue. LeBron can slot in wherever you want. You know, yeah, you might have to trade Jared Allen, but I think that that needs to happen anyways because you're redundant at the center position. You could just give Evan Mobley that situation. And if you can get another wing or another shooting guard, somebody else to help you out at a different spot out of a Jared Allen trade, I think people would be totally okay with that. There's no reason why Jared Allen or the current construction of the team would need to hinder LeBron's potential for coming back here to Cleveland. 216-474-0092. Do you feel like a fit even matters when it's coming to LeBron? I don't think it does. I don't think it does whatsoever. I also don't think that Kenny Atkinson would be fired midseason or that he'd even be fired after the season. All right, we're going to leave the LeBron conversation there. We will come back to it later on in the show, but Guardians had a huge weekend series against the Chicago White Sox. Split it. They get the day off to rest and recoup before their road trip. We're going to talk to Cade Crassus of Sports Illustrated and the Daily Guardians next. It's Anthony Alance in for Jake Volnick on 92.3 The Fan. Guardians had a big weekend series against the Chicago White Sox. They're off today before they head out for a final couple of games on the road against the Twins and the Marlins. Don't overlook the Marlins. They're a really good team. They got a lot of young players that are doing a lot, like playing way, way over their heads. And right now they're 7 games over .500. So they actually have a better record than you guys do. But 3 games against the Twins leading into that series, I think, is going to be huge. It's a perfect opportunity to, number one, win a series and set yourself up in a perfect spot heading into the All-Star break. But then you go down to Miami, and look, if you could split that, like this weekend set, if you could split this road trip heading into the All-Star break, I would be absolutely like, I wouldn't be insanely impressed. I wouldn't be going into the All-Star break like uber excited or really, really ready to go going into it. But if you could take two or three from the Twins and then go down to Miami and see what you can do there, I think that sets you up going into the All-Star break for a perfect last couple of weeks before the trade deadline. Again, a lot of what we need to evaluate the Guardians with until Jose Ramirez comes back is how well do they stay above water? How well are they able to just ride out this storm before you get those reinforcements after the All-Star break? And from all the reporting that I've seen with Jose Ramirez, he's coming back very, very quickly. So he might be coming back on the shorter end of that 6 to 8 week, was it 4 to 6 week timetable that the doctors originally gave him when he broke that handmade bone. I think as long as you can stay afloat and make sure that you are within one game of the Chicago White Sox going into the All-Star break, and then even when Jose Ramirez comes back, you set yourself up in a tremendously good spot heading down the stretch. And then, of course, that opens up the situation where what do you do about the trade deadline? I think there's a lot of positions across the board where there are still some legitimate question marks. Obviously, the bullpen is the big one. You get Franco Alamán back up here. You send down Daniel Espino. That was more so a thing of Espino pitched 2 1/3 innings, and he really wasn't going to pitch anywhere else this weekend series. But Alamán is a guy that I have been calling for consistently to be back up here because he was mowing down guys in AAA. So the bullpen is something that you address. Do you really want to go into the home stretch of this season with just five starters? They're one of the only teams in baseball. I think they're the only team in baseball that has only used five starting pitchers this entire season. And then you open up the question of what do you do about second base, about third base, about the outfield specifically. I say third base, but it's really a shot at Gabriel Arias. What do you do about the outfield? Do you call up somebody else like Ralphie Velasquez, who's young, just turned 21, but he's tearing the cover off the ball in AAA? Do you stick with what you have right now in Khalil Watson, in Cooper Engel, who's had a really, really rough start to his major league career, and Chase DeLauder in right field? Stephen Kwan is on a 7-game hitting streak. He's batting about 300 during that stretch, and he seems to be slowly, and I mean ever so slowly, working his way back into form. There are a lot of places where I feel good about it, but not great. And I guess it's a question of how do you feel about especially the corner outfield spots, especially the bullpen. How do you really, really want to address those types of things at this trade deadline? I guess we can squeeze in a FIFA comment real quick. We can break up the guards talk. Joe is in Cleveland. What's up, man?
Oh, dude, is that the best? Like, I love it because you cannot beat us. You Americans cannot beat, you know, that this is our game. And you see it. Those fans are like, whether they're all Italian or Portugal, whatever, it's not the players, it's the fans. When they start putting money, 10, 20 bucks, the day after so they can go 4 years later to watch their game. This is like so fun to watch it through the United States. Dude, this is awesome.
So, Joe, on Wednesday for the Bosnia game, I went out to a bar in Ohio City that's like one of the most famous soccer bars, I guess, in Cleveland. And if I wasn't already all the way in on FIFA, like parachuting into a sport that I do not understand.
Right.
It was the most electric atmosphere I've ever been in.
Like Germany was in Wake Forest.
Yeah.
I mean, like it's incredible that they did this in the United States. I'm saving my money. They would say like their clubs, they would do like $10, $20 a week. So the next 4 years, that's why they have all these fans there. We haven't even realized what this is. It's awesome, ain't it?
So what you're telling me is I have my rainy day fund for like when I pop another tire in my car, and I should also have a FIFA fund?
I'm 64 years old. I should have had a heart attack by now. I got five FIFA cups on Big Macs, all right? I could be dead by now. I mean, it's amazing. I love this.
All right, Joe. Well, we're glad you're with us, and enjoy the game tonight, all right?
You know, bro.
All right. Joe in Cleveland. That was worth
I'm
it.
I'm so confused.
I think he's just excited. I think he might be in the...
No, I like the energy, but I don't know. I got lost.
I think maybe he got boozed up a little bit before the game. Look, Matt Corral was walking out of here being like, I think I'm going to get boozed up for this soccer game. Like, I don't have to... I'm sorry, soccer match. I don't have to work tomorrow, which kind of odd that he doesn't have to work on a Tuesday, but that's neither here nor there. But he's like, yeah, like my country needs me. I need to go drink tonight. So I guess, look, at any point tonight, if you guys want to call in about FIFA, I will happily take it. I just need to place my USA bet. But anyways, back to the Guardians. I want to know how people feel heading out of that big weekend series against the White Sox. Obviously, you have the two huge games in walk-off fashion Thursday and Friday night. I was at the Thursday night game when Brian Rocchio hit that home run off the foul pole. And I'll tell you what, man, it was an incredibly exciting, electric atmosphere. I didn't really know how the fans were going to take to the White Sox being on par, if not ahead of the Guardians heading into that series. And as I mentioned to Michael Markoch on Friday, I think the point in time where Cleveland really started to take the White Sox seriously was that game Thursday night, because the feeling of euphoria that I saw coming out of the dugout, the feeling of euphoria that I saw in the standing room section and everybody jumping around and hugging each other, that felt like a late September game in a divisional battle where both teams were vying for a spot in the playoffs. That didn't feel like a mid-July game to kick off a big weekend series. And then obviously Friday night, you go down early, you come back once again, then Khalil Watson, another unsung hero, is able to get you going and is able to win the game for you. Like, all of these things add up going into the weekend. My theory is that a lot of people just sort of tuned them out Saturday and Sunday. Maybe they had them on in the background, but it was a holiday weekend. People were out and about. I get it if you didn't necessarily watch all of the games. And then Sunday, it was a rain delay. People are probably hungover, trying to figure out what the hell they're what the hell's going on in their head and setting themselves up for the week. So my guess is that people watch Thursday, Friday night and then tune them out. But I can't help but feel excited and optimistic about this team after that weekend series, because what it showed me once again is that they are able to compete with some of the best teams across the American League. We saw this earlier in the season when they played Tampa Bay and when they played New York. And even though they weren't able to win all of those series, they were able to play competitive games. And it felt to you night in and night out like the team that we have right now belonged on the same field with those teams, and across a 3-game wildcard series, a 5-game divisional, or a 7-game championship series, that we would be able to hold our own in series like that. So I was really, really curious to see how the team was going to play heading into this series. And then despite the fact that some of the problems that we've been seeing over the last month and a half cropped up on Saturday and Sunday, despite the fact that they weren't able to win the series and you end up leaving with a split and losing Saturday and Sunday, I felt really good heading into what is going to be this final road trip and then eventually the All-Star break because of what I saw on Thursday and Friday night. Not everything is fixed, and there still is the question of whether or not this team can put the pedal fully down to the metal and really like go on a 5-6-game winning streak. You haven't really been able to see that from them this year. You know, it's win one game, lose two, win three, lose two, different stuff like that. They get a couple of games over 500 and then they play a terrible road trip or something like that. But they've been able to tread water just enough and prove to me that night in and night out, you have an opportunity to win the game. The pitching staff has figured itself out, and it's not going to be perfect all season. Not everybody's going to be perfect every single night. We saw that with Tanner Bibee yesterday, even though we blame the rain delay and different stuff like that. I get it. It's a routine sport. It's tough when you have a rain delay like that. But the pitching staff has proven to me to be good enough. Cade Smith has proven to be good enough. And so for me, it's just how do you get from the starting pitcher that night to the ninth inning? That's why I think you do need to go get a bullpen guy. And then obviously I feel not great about the offense, but I'm still optimistic that in the back of my mind, I know that Angel Martinez is coming back soon and that Jose Ramirez is trending really quickly in the right direction toward coming back. 216-474-0092. I do wonder if they're able to stay afloat, if they're able to continue to steal series away from teams that they maybe shouldn't, or at least split against the teams that are on par and better with them, if the Guardians decide that this is the year that they need to go for it. Is this the year that we should be more aggressive than we have in years past and try and fix our bullpen, go get that right-handed stick that we've all called for? You have the young guys up already, and they're contributing in a big way for the most part. What else can you add to this team? I know it's asking a lot for an organization and a franchise that just doesn't do that, but it's July, and of course we're going to crop up the trade deadline situations. I think this weekend series could have definitely gone better. I would have loved to see 3 out of 4, but to take those first two games in the fashion that you did, I would hold on to that as opposed to what looked to be a one-off kind of clunker weird game on Sunday, and then you chalk Saturday up to just, it is what it is. 216-474-0092. How do you feel about this team after the weekend series that we just had as well? We touched on it a little bit. We'll dive deeper into the trade deadline conversation. It's Anthony Allant in for Jake Volnick on 92.3 The Fan.